Hi, and welcome to the Rare Business Podcast. My name is Adrian Swinsko, and I'm a consultant, advisor, researcher, and writer on all things related to customer service and customer experience. Through this podcast, I seek out and interview CEOs, entrepreneurs, business and tech leaders, and leading thinkers about what it takes to build organizations that produce better outcomes for both customers and employees in this fast-moving modern age that we live in. If this is your first time listening to one of these interviews, then welcome. And please do dive into the archives at adrianswinsko.com, as I've now completed over 250 of these interviews in the last few years. If this is not your first time listening, then thank you for returning, and I'll aim to do a good enough job to keep you coming back week after week. Anyway, that's enough from me right now. Let's get into the interview. So, welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Sean Belding, who is the CEO of the Belding Group of Companies, author of numerous books, and is joining us today to talk about his new book, which I'm sure he's going to tell us about in a minute. Hi, Sean. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic, Adrian. How are you doing?
I am splendid, sir. Very, very splendid. So, Sean, I know you've been away traveling for the last few weeks around Asia, so hopefully you're all recovered and not over the jet lag, but if you can remember your name and where you are, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and the work that you do?
I can. I think I'm getting old now. My brain sort of shows up about 2 days after I land from a trip to Asia. So it came back this morning, so that's a good thing.
Wow.
For me, I've been involved in customer experience and customer service for a little over 25 years. Mm-hmm. And my company has two divisions, one that provides consulting and audits on customer experience and a training division that's focused on customer service training and leadership training. And so that's kind of the most recent 25 years. Before that, I owned a chain of toy stores at one point, and back when I had a real job, I worked in national and international advertising agencies here in North America. So, yeah, so that there it is in a nutshell.
Perfect. Now, you've, as I said before, you've written a bunch of books, but your new book, which has just recently come out, is called The Journey to Wow. Well, actually, and also the subtitle is The Path to Outstanding Customer Experience and Loyalty. So can you tell me about the book, how it came about, and so what is its main thesis?
It was, how it came about was, I'd been over the years, and I think anybody that, like you, who's been in this field for any length of time, mm-hmm. you've seen customer service and customer experience morph, certainly technology and all the things that have started to impact how we as customers behave. And it was just time. It was one of those things where I would be picking up and reading books that would sort of have, that were always kind of from the company's perspective or from a person's perspective.
Right.
And none of them were written from the customer's perspective.
Right.
And I thought that has to happen because really we have to stop trying to solve problems without understanding what the problems are from the only perspective that matters, right, uh-huh. which is the customer. So that's where that came from.
Perfect. And so the fascinating thing that I noticed, I mean, it was the first thing, and I was like, oh, crumbs. And when I first picked up the book, I looked at it because, you know, I get sent loads of books, but I also buy loads of books, and I tend to be pretty good at sort of like skimming through them and getting a quick sense of kind of how they are. But the first thing you notice about this book, when it arrived for me, is that I picked it up and I was like, Because actually the thing I noticed is that the book is actually written as a story rather than a standard business book. So it's in the sort of almost the style of The Goal by Eli Goldratt, if you're familiar with that book, which I love, by the way. So can you tell me, I mean, why did you take that approach? And also, are you an aspiring fictional writer?
Well, yeah, the question my publisher asked, it's true. I'm really, really happy you mentioned The Goal, simply because I had not read The Goal, but I have somebody who I have a phenomenal amount of respect for, and she had been a client for many years. And I had sent her a copy of the book, like one of the original copies of the book,
right,
just to say, what do you think? And basically, what she said was going to depend whether or not I was actually going to use the book or like get it published, or just throw it in the garbage.
Right.
That was her response. She says, wow, it was just kind of like the goal, which then I had to turn around and read the goal and realize that was a compliment. So that was kind of exciting. But it is. You know, it was so different from my first books. But there are kind of three reasons, I guess, I wanted to do it. The first one had to do with the power of a story. I mean, yes. Like you, I spend a huge amount of times in front of people, you know, keynote speaking and conferences and mm-hmm. workshops, that sort of thing. And when I would talk to people after a session, I mean, sometimes months or years later, the bits that would that they would inevitably recall, that would be a story I told. And I came to realize how effective the approach is for creating something that resonates, right?
Sure.
And it's memorable. And that's, you know, the second one just had to do with the subject matter. I mean, customer experience is ultimately about the journey a customer has through our business, and mm-hmm. it's start to finish. And how a customer responds to a company's processes or policies or practices or people, the customer service they receive. Like, I became convinced that traditional clinical and analytical approach just wasn't going to touch it. Wasn't going to touch the essence of experience, because a customer's experience is neither clinical, it's not analytical, it's very nature, it's emotional. There's no point in trying to identify how to improve an emotional connection without deeply examining an individual's organization from the perspective of the customer. So
sure,
that did it. And then the third one just had to do with reach. Again, I mean, we all know customer experience has to be generated from every aspect of a business and every person in a business. It's not a
right.
department, as we all know. And, you know, and the reality is not everybody in an organization enjoys reading traditional business books. I thought, hey, if I can write something that hopefully would read as well as a story as it does a business book, maybe I can get something that will appeal to, you know, a broader reach in an organization. So,
yeah.
So that was it, sort of in a nutshell. That's kind of why I chose that one.
And have you had much experience in writing sort of fictional stories before? I mean, how hard was it to make that transition from writing something from a more of a, I feel like a business sort of perspective to like a business story perspective?
I have no experience whatsoever in writing stories. I had so much fun. I mean, all my life, you know, writing has been part of my life. I had so much fun. And all I know is that, you know, people like, Tom Clancy, they make more money than I do in writing those kinds of things. So maybe I should give it a crack. But no, you know, it was just honestly, Adrian, it was cathartic, right? Like writing that format was because I had fun with the characters, and
right.
it was just cathartic. So,
and so, forgive me. I mean, as a writer, an author myself. I mean, and it's something like we were talking about this before we started, and it was something that my wife was saying that you should write a script and so on and so forth. And I'm like thinking, oh, because you're giving me a headache now, and you're laying down a challenge. But can you explain to me, how are you going to go about it? I mean, obviously stories, beginning, middle and end, but did you have to like storyboard it out sort of thing to try and do it? Or how did you actually kind of develop the whole thing? I mean, because it's like you have to learn another skill in many ways.
Well, you know, it's I didn't. I probably should have. That's what people that know what they're doing do, I think.
All right.
In this case, I had, and like so many things, I mean, I had the vision in my head of kind of what I wanted.
Okay.
And I had a genre. I love tongue-in-cheek kind of books. I like books that have some humor in it. And things like Janet Ivanovich, you know, the author who I've read all of her stuff. And
right.
Robert Parker, his kinds of things. So I kind of had the characters. And, you know, what's funny, you talked about storyboarding it out. I had started writing it almost, God, I think it was like 8-9 years ago I started writing, maybe 8 years ago. And the characters, so I had in my head sort of what I wanted to do. And we just happened to be in England. We went to London.
Okay.
And I was there with my wife and my daughter and my oldest daughter. And my oldest daughter is a gigantic Mary Poppins fan.
Right.
Always has been. And the play Mary Poppins had just come into the theater. So of course you're in London, you have to go and see a play. So we watched that, and my daughter squealed like a, you know, like nothing. And of course, Mary Poppins ended up being a big part of the character, of the one of the individuals in terms of the personality.
Right.
But the main character, and the funny thing was, we were sitting in a double decker hop on hop off bus.
Right.
So I've been to London many times, but you know my daughter hadn't. So we wanted to go. So we're doing the hop on hop off, and I'm trying to I've got my little notebook, and I'm trying to think of the character's name. Like I couldn't. So I already had a first name. I knew it was going to be Cameron. Was going to be the first name. I knew that was going to be. And I was just, okay, well, last name. And I was going through them, and we just, the bus stopped right outside of Whitehall Street.
Right.
I said, Whitehall, that's a good name, Cameron Whitehall. So that was, to answer your question, no, it was an absolute throw spaghetti against the wall kind of approach, which is probably why it took 9 years.
Well, I mean, I guess that's the storyboarding is probably, it's probably just something that was kind of ruminating or sort of ruminating away for in your subconscious for 8 to 9 years.
So, yeah, absolutely.
Enough talk about the process. So can you give us an overview of like the plot? Because I mean, I think it's an interesting thing about when you write it as a story, because it's kind of harder to dip in and dip out. So can you give us, if you like, in movie terms, a trailer for the story? Feel free to add in music.
Yeah, I was thinking that. The story was what I wanted to do, Adrian, and just to sort of begin with, is
sure.
A lot of people think of customer experience, and a lot of people sort of get muddy about the terms customer experience, customer service, but a lot of people sort of, as soon as they hear the term, they either think retail or they think call center.
Yeah.
And of course, that's not true. It's every company, every organization. So I created the foundation, the company, in the story as being a manufacturer called Household Solutions that manufactures household appliances, you know, small appliances,
yeah,
that sort of. So anyway, this company, Household Solutions, just discovered that their horrible customer experience is leading them to a slow, painful death. And the main character in the book, as I mentioned, is Cameron Whitehall. He's a design engineer. He knows nothing about customer experience, customer service. And he's one of the executive VPs in the company.
Uh-huh.
And to his dismay, he's conscripted by the CEO to be the one responsible for turning the company around.
Right.
This whole experience failure. Yeah, he doesn't know anything about it, but he gets connected eventually to this quirky consultant. She's a 70-something eccentric, irreverent, irrepressible shopaholic. Her name's Madeline. Now, if you think of Mary Poppins meeting the good wife, Elizabeth Taccioni, it's that kind of a character. And Maddie, if you call her Madeline, she gets upset. So you have to call her Maddie. And Maddie leads him through this odd four-level retail building in L.A.'s eclectic Santee Alley area. And at each level, he just watches how customers respond to flawed processes and policies and practices and people. And eventually he gets to the top floor, of course, and learns what true wow customer experiences are and then what it takes to create them. So the whole story is about him going through this and then understanding the importance of leadership. And then he takes all the lessons back to the leadership team at Household Solutions and sort of presents to them and watches them struggle,
right?
Like as he did with the concept. So that's kind of, you know, ultimately getting them to become champions of customer experience. So it really was a journey in that sense. It was his journey, and then taking it back to a completely different type of environment. So from starting with retail and going back to manufacturing, just to illustrate that this journey applies to every organization.
Perfect. And so, I mean, obviously not wanting to that, I mean, that's the broad story and there's a lot of detail in the story, but maybe could you perhaps give us maybe a couple of examples of situations that Cameron sort of faced or things that he kind of learned and what happened and what we can learn from them, just to give us a flavor of his kind of journey. Because then I'm trying to almost like dig into the book without giving it all away, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely. Fair enough. Yeah, like a trailer without
Yay,
the music.
There you go.
That's good. Yeah, there we are. There's so many, of course, and some that were just plain fun to write.
Right.
I mean, that I put in there. And I can think of two off the top of my head.
Okay.
So many of the situations, so for the first one, many of the situations are situations where Maddie just sets him up, which, again, was fun to write. And so the one example is she introduces him to a manager of one of the stores. They can level two, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. And he's a completely unlikable character. He's rude. He's cold. He's unhelpful. And after just a brief visit, Cameron, you know, they're walking away, and Cameron asks why she arranged for the visit, since there are obviously no customer experience lessons to be learned here. And she simply responds to him by asking Cameron, like, why he hadn't mentioned a fairly significant pricing glitch he discovered on the household solutions products in that store. Like, why he hadn't mentioned that to the manager. And he admits that he was going to, but then he changed his mind after meeting the man, right? And he said, the man obviously doesn't care about me, so why should I care about him?
Right.
And Madeline, of course, she smiles this innocent smile that she's got, and she just says, oh, that's a good point. No reason at all, I guess. And then she adds, too bad there's no customer experience lesson in here.
Right.
But he realizes the point, right, that if we want customers to care about us, then we have to demonstrate we care about them. He says something like, you really enjoy it when I say stupid things, don't you? And she thinks for a moment and says, well, yes, I do. Right. So they have this fun relationship. And so that's an example of the kinds of things. But one of my favorite chapters, I think it may, yeah, one of my two or three favorite chapters was chapter 21. And it's Cameron's in the boardroom trying to get the executive team of Household Solutions to see the world through their customers' eyes.
Right.
So he hands each, he pulls out one of their household solution product and hands one to each of them and puts $50 on the table. Mm-hmm. And he tells them that the first person who can figure out how to contact warranty support will get the $50.
And crumbs.
So everybody, you know, they're looking at the box, they're opening their boxes, they're looking at the instructions or lack thereof. And it ends up with the CEO, the whole, you know, without again going into detail, it ends up with the CEO trying to navigate through their impenetrable IVR phone system with everybody listening on the speakerphone. And, you know, the CEO is getting angrier and angrier and shouting. And it's what was fun about it is it was an experience that we've all had. We've all had these experiences
sure.
at some point in our lives. And it just highlighted the kinds of little things that can totally destroy a customer's experience, and the companies can be completely blind to. So it was fun, and it was really cathartic to write, because, you know, I think almost all of us have had the experience where we're screaming into the telephone at a machine.
Yes.
So that's what it was. So I had so much fun writing that one. So I have no idea if it's fun to read, but I don't care. I just had so much fun writing.
I think it's brilliant, because I think what it does is it also kind of humanizes the delivery of great experience on both sides. So it's almost about, because I think about the idea of, and something I've written about before, just reflecting on what is the difference between customer experience and the customer's experience.
Yes.
And technically speaking, you could say it's four letters and an apostrophe. But in reality, it can be a country mile, because sometimes when people deal with customer experience, it can become so divorced from the customer's experience.
Yes.
It's quite frightening. And so when you actually start to, if you like, humanize things and go, like, take people outside of their normal groove, as it were, and put them in the customer's shoes and let them feel and see and experience what it is like to be a customer. Sometimes they are astounded at their own, if you like, ignorance, stupidity, foolishness, blindedness, kind of whatever you want to call it. So that situation around the CEO trying to navigate this interminable maze that is their IVR is I wish more people would try and do that. Would almost like drink their own Kool-Aid.
Yeah, the Kool-Aid they didn't even know they had.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Just go, and how does it taste now?
Yeah.
So I think it's powerful stuff when you translate some of the, if you like, the theory into story form, because actually I think it makes it easier for people to see how things might really be in reality, rather than in principle or out from behind a big desk or from behind a plate glass window sort of thing. As you're
exactly.
looking out into it, so it almost puts them in the world and in the world of their customers.
So, and yet it's hard to do. I mean, it's hard to do within your own company. It's hard to sort of step outside.
Yeah. I mean, it's, we get caught, and we're sometimes like kind of hamsters, and we get caught up and kind of like just kind of getting busy chasing around, trying to keep up sort of thing. And it is really hard to make that sort of space, but it's incumbent on people to, I guess, to do that, because otherwise we end up sort of almost just losing touch. But I mean, the other thing I was thinking about was that, I mean, because those are like common mistakes, right, that companies make.
Yeah.
I mean, what other sort of common mistakes that companies do you think can they make as they embark on this journey to create their great, outstanding, excellent kind of customer experience?
The biggest one, I think the biggest one, the most devastating mistake, mm-hmm. and it's made by, an awful lot of companies, and sadly, companies that tend to be very successful, and that is believing that they've made it. The ones that say, we deliver great customer experience. And the truth is that the very moment you think you've achieved it, yeah, is the moment you start that decline into mediocrity, because it's a journey. What was good enough yesterday is not good enough today.
Yes.
And what's good enough today won't be good enough tomorrow. And the complacency is the enemy. And it's everywhere, and I think that's the one most common mistake. And I tell you, and it's, so in North America, and I think in North America there's Sears, right? Sears was North America's Marks and Spencer, right? I mean, mm-hmm. It's been around since the beginning of time. It was the hallmark. The loyalty to this organization, my parents would bleed for Sears. I mean, they bought everything from them,
right?
And they got basically, I mean, there's all kinds of reasons that what happened that Sears is no longer, but it really boiled down to the bond they had with their customers. They started taking it for granted. They started changing. Basically, they started listening to their accountants, mm-hmm. instead of to their customers. And they chipped away at their own loyalty, at their own customer experience. And they forgot what made them so successful in the first place. And if you look at other organizations that are today, in today's world, that are unsinkable, like Sears, can you imagine in the 1970s in the United States, somebody saying, you know, Sears is going to go out of business?
Yeah.
That would be absolutely unthinkable. It would be like saying in today's world, Amazon's going to go out of business.
Well, actually, kind of funny you should say that, because I don't know if you've seen this, but actually Jeff Bezos was quoted as saying the other day to, I think it was a company meeting to a bunch of the Amazon employees, and he turned around and he said, Amazon will fail, almost as a stark kind of warning, sort of thing. Yeah. But also kind of like a thing which says, is a warning, but also to snap people out of their sometimes their complacency, or the, yep, you know, to blow the cobwebs away from any sort of, you know, complacency that might be sitting in, because they're big, they're huge, they're dominant in a number of different areas. But it's almost like it's the shadow that holds up over people. Said people, let's not take this for granted, you know. And well, and he said,
good for
like,
him.
It will be. He said that Amazon will fail, and I just thought that's fascinating, but and also quite long sighted and prescient.
It is, and it's good for him. But you can already see, like, the chinks in their armor,
yep,
starting because of their size. So Amazon, how long have they had the reputation in the top, always in the top five for customer experience,
yep,
for online companies? And yet, in today's world, and, you know, I've had this, I was talking with it almost became a support group, an Amazon support group,
yep,
of people that have tried to call them.
Yes.
It's like, I have a question that I can't answer on live chat and your self-help things. I would just want to talk to a human being. And the incredible frustration. Uh-huh. And I'm thinking, okay, there's a chink that Mr. Bezos, I suspect, is not aware of.
Yes.
Because I don't think that's part of the vision. And yet there doesn't appear to be anybody that's either tasked with or care enough to fix that sort of thing. And that's how it starts.
Yes. Right?
That's one little thing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've got an outstanding sort of query that's kind of keeps rolling on with Amazon. And I think it might have dropped off the radar. So you just prompted me to go and email them again, because that's my only course of recourse, the only course of action that I have. And I have to log in to email them, which is kind of kind of a bit weird. But anyway, that aside. But here's the final couple of things, Sean. So if somebody's listening in to this chat that we're having and are reading the highlights and they're thinking, I'd like to start my own journey to WoW. Obviously, you're going to tell them to go buy the book, and that's absolutely fine, and you should do that.
Or two or three, maybe.
Or two or three. Or actually, yeah, a whole case of them. That's fine.
And give that would them, be awesome.
Give them out to their kind of people and have a book club thing. That'd be brilliant.
Exactly. You know, and I have to say, by the way, the only reason it's called the Journey to WoW is that somebody took the title How to WoW.
I wonder who that was. But if they wanted to start their own journey to WoW, I mean, in advance of buying the book and reading it and getting to the end and figuring it out themselves, I mean, where would you encourage them to start? I mean, what sort of things should they be doing first?
That for me is the easy question, Adrian. Easy and hard. And it's exactly what we were talking about. It's the step that almost all companies miss. I mean almost all. Mm-hmm. If you really want to start on it, you have to start by being one of your customers. You have to get out from behind your desk and understand what life is like as one of your own customers. Surveys, reports, spreadsheets, they're just not good enough. They're unhelpful.
Yeah.
In terms of understanding. Customer focus groups are better, but they're still not good enough. None of these uncover the why questions that your customers are asking your company every day. It's like, you know, why did they make me do this?
Yeah.
Why don't they do this? Why don't they have this? Your customers ask it.
Yes.
And you're not ever going to get that from a spreadsheet and from your NPS score or from your customer efforts. You're not going to get that stuff. And so be a customer. In fact, the TV show, Undercover Boss.
I love that show.
Yeah. Watch a few episodes of it and understand how incredibly valuable it is when your whole perspective changes. So be one of your customers. Don't send somebody else to be one of your customers. Be one of your customers. In fact, I'll tell you one CEO, somebody who I've known for 20, give or take, years, and one of the smartest human beings I know, mm-hmm. Of a company most of us would recognize the name, but I promised him I'd never use it. But here's what he does. And he started this maybe a little over 10 years ago. Is they've got their database of customers. Mm-hmm. And he makes a point, and now every vice president in this company is mandated that they have to make no fewer than 5 unprompted telephone calls, not emails, telephone calls, mm-hmm. to customers from their base. And it's basically a random call. It says, hi, my name is, you know, XYZ, and I'm from this company. And this sounds like a bizarre sort of call, but you know what? I just wanted to talk and find out what you think of us and how things go. And so he's been doing this for a little over 10 years.
Right.
And just random calls. And he said it keeps him so grounded. So now he takes a full week out of his life. So you imagine a CEO disappearing for a week, uh-huh. working in a call center in the escalations department. They don't cherry pick the calls that they send him. They don't treat him like the CEO. I mean, he goes down and just talks to the people that are angry and frustrated and need help. And he said he learns more in that 1 week than he learns in an entire year about his company. That'd be my advice. Just be one of your customers.
He is kind of my new nameless hero.
Me too.
Yeah, because I love stories like that. I mean, I remember a story that I wrote about, and I don't know if you've heard of this guy. There's the guy called Sheldon Yellen, who is the CEO of Belfer. And I think they're global, but they're largely in the US, and they do sort of disaster recovery type of stuff. You know, like a fire goes through something or a hurricane or whatever, they go in and rebuild communities. They have about 7,500 or 8,000 employees. And every year he writes every employee a handwritten birthday card.
Wow.
Do the math. If you average it out as equal numbers across every day, you just like do the math. Wow. That's crazy.
That is crazy. I mean, it's 20 a day.
Yeah.
It's And, but the impact would be huge.
And I wrote, because so here's the thing, I heard about that. I wrote about that, and guess what? He wrote me a handwritten card.
That's fantastic.
Absolutely. And on his 60th birthday, guess what happened? He got about 8,000 birthday cards.
Handwritten, I'll bet. That's fantastic.
And it's like he's been doing it for like 20, 25 years. He started kind of small and he's done it throughout his career. And then he just kind of scaled it up. And I tell that story to people and they are incredulous. And like, how does he do that? Does he kind of have it printed out? He just signs them. Does he have an auto signer and so on and so forth? I was like, no. I says, he even addresses the envelopes.
Oh, wow. That is amazing. But think about the employee loyalty.
Oh.
Like the connection the employees will have to the business.
Exactly. And so I tell people that story and they look at it and just go, oh my word. I'm like, we've got like 150 people in our team and I'd struggle to do that. I'm like, he's got like 7,500 and he's like smashing it out. And I'm just like going, it just puts so many people to shame in terms of the amount of commitment that they're willing to show and display on behalf of their people and other customers. And it's, I think for me, you're right, so be your own customer, go out and actually do the work sort of thing. But there, I was, as you were talking, I was thinking that there's a couple of words that occurred to me about that sort of the behavior and about companies and those the people that drive those companies is that the first of all, I think the word that occurred to me is that they're restless. They're always wanting to be kind of better and to do more. And the other thing is that they're relentless.
Yes.
In that they're just, it was whatever they face, they'll just keep plowing on and plowing on and plowing on and plowing on. And I think that's the difference. Because like you talked about this idea about complacency. If you're restless and you're relentless, then that complacency is not likely to show up anytime soon.
That's exactly right. And relentless is the best. I cannot think of a better word. It's how many times have you, with organizations you've worked with, Adrian, have you heard people say, well, it's just kind of flavor of the month?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, how many times have we all thought of this? And if somebody's relentless, they never get accused of a flavor of the month initiative.
No. So, Sean, is there anything else that you'd like to add that we've missed out about the book or whatever? Or just kind of give us a final kind of roundup and do a flagrant pitch?
Well, but
knock yourself out.
Well, I won't necessarily do the pitch, but I will say that customer experience has been on the big radar now for a fair number of years, and I hope it doesn't die. I hope it doesn't become a flavor of the month that dies. And one of the things I think that's happened is that we've got so focused on measuring things.
Sure.
We're so focused on metrics, and because we like metrics as business owners, business managers, leaders, because you can rub your face in them and you can use them to measure. But we have to stop. We have to throw the metrics out for a bit, and we have to just start connecting with our customers. We have to start being a customer, understanding our customers. Let's forget about the numbers. The numbers. I mean, there's a giant thing right now called survey fatigue, where consumers are just stop asking me what I think and just do something. Like people are getting genuinely angry about surveys.
Sure.
So, customer experience, it's irrelevant what I think about my business, how I deliver experience. The only thing that's relevant is how my customers perceive it from their perspective. So get out there, stop asking them questions, get out there, be them, talk with them, listen to them, and then do something. Like if nothing else, just try and do something that addresses it. So anyway, there you go. That's my pitch. My pitch is, and then of course, buy lots of my books because I still have one child in university.
I love it. Sean, first of all, congratulations on the book. Thank you for your time today and sharing your time and experience and telling us a little bit about the book. And that's been great. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Adrian. This is fantastic.
Well, that's it for another interview. I really hope you enjoyed it. Now, every time I complete one of these interviews, I learn something new, and I try and incorporate that new learning into my writing, my speaking, my workshops, and the consulting that I do for my clients. If you're interested, you can find out more about how I work with clients over at adrianswinsko.com. But one final thing before I go, please consider heading over to iTunes or whichever podcast platform you choose to use, and do leave a review. Every little helps, as they say. Anyway, that's all for now. Thank you for listening, and do listen in again. All the very best.